What would the next agency that might look at this data misinterpret? Let me make sure and think about that. And in the article that I submitted, I tried to bring you up to date on who shares what with whom, and that in 2021, for example, there's a new memorandum of understanding between the Department of Labor and USCIS where your PERM and LCA information is being shared with USCIS. We just had an excellent panel up here, and PERM is so far over my head. But when I think about PERM and the specificity of where is the work site, and we talk about, oh, we'll use the individual's home, and yet, am I describing in the Department of Labor filing that this is an individual's home, and it's a business work site address? So later on, when I'm putting a different work site address, perhaps in an H-1B petition, for example, are the two syncing? Because I'm going to need an extension, perhaps after that PERM has been filed. So I think you've always got to think the full scope, and don't think in a silo manner, because the information is being exchanged, and the depth of AI they are using to analyze trends is much more robust. In the article, I tried to outline the use of the VIBE system by USCIS. And it's fascinating that VIBE now also is engaged within the review of E-Verify information. I can't tell you how many of the employers that we have where their E-Verify enrollment is all over the map. They might be enrolled multiple times across the country. They might be enrolled in this way in one location and that way in another. And their E-Verify data is not consistent. So if now we're going to have USCIS, and they are, basically plumbing, phishing, I just think that it gives you a higher level of possibility of confusion. And that confusion can lead to the subject matter of this conversation, site visits, but again, it's a broader scope. Also, I wanted to make sure that you're aware of how much they're utilizing social media. Anytime that I'm filing an application now, I'm Googling. I'm Googling. Is your job title really that on your LinkedIn profile? What the heck have you been posting on Facebook about where you work? What does the company state about where its locations are? Is the location of the work site that I'm disclosing on an I-129 petition or a 9089, is it there in your social profile or your corporate profile? When you compare it to the financial documentation of your company, is any of it jiving? Is some of it that's critical not the same? And you see that there's employer disclosures and, you know, the level of your payroll and all sorts of fun stuff that's out there. Take a look at the addenda that I've provided to see the breadth of the information that is being subject to review. Also, if there have been prior compliance issues and there have been payment of penalties in the past, whether it's Form I-9 or whether it's worksite compliance or whether it's wage and hour division, you need to know about it. What happened? Wages being paid. Are you checking to make sure the wages being paid were accurate? Or are you documenting on your extension filing that it is no longer applicable, as in going south versus north on quantity? This is the panoply of different fund agencies we deal with. I'm sure this is nothing new to all of you guys. But some of this stuff, like the DSS function, which is like it's a security function of the Department of State. I've had Department of State agents do a site visit along the border. Or I've had Department of State officers send emails to confirm where the employee is or what the employee may be doing. What I did on the addenda to the boring article, which is great for an insomnia cure, is I tried to list some examples for you that I hope will make it a little more concrete as to what I'm talking about. So, for example, on the first addenda, what the heck is in this thing called VIBE? You know, what forms are they really running this program on to figure out trends? Well, here we go on Exhibit A. So the I-90, the I-129, the I-140, the I-360 for special immigrants, the 485 adjustment application, the 765 employment unauthorization document, application, and the 821 application for TPS. All of those are going through VIBE. You'll see that in Exhibit B, what I've done, here's a three-page email regarding L1 compliance. And all sorts of fun things about what is the number of locations that your company operates overseas? What are those locations? What is the name of the foreign company that the U.S. company is associated with? That one is a giver, you know, forgiven. The next attachment I have, which I hope you'll look at, is one where, sorry, I have to scroll through to find it. Exhibit C. Oh, yes. This is after there's been an H-1B site visit. Let's say it's a third-party work site. The follow-up email about, unfortunately, we couldn't talk to so-and-so, but here I want this, this, and this information. And you know if you don't let the FDNS officer in, it's actually a checkbox, which Peter Williamson in the audience got a FOIA response, and he's reading right now, but he got a FOIA response that I read, and it related to this particular issue of what happens after you have a compliance audit and you don't respond or you're not there, and how that elevates the escalation of the FDNS review, Fraud Detection and National Security Directorate of USCIS.